This is Jim Peek at MySuccessGateway.com, and today I've got a fantastic podcast call with Mr. Patrick Juanes, and you can find him at PatrickJuanes.com, and it's spelled Patrick, WANIS.com. Welcome, Patrick.
Thanks, Jim.
This is the call about the Sweat Lodge tragedy down in Sedona, Arizona, and James Ray had an event down there, and apparently there were a few things that went wrong, terribly wrong, and it cost some people their lives.
Well, there's so many points to this story, Jim. Let's just give everyone listening to this call a sort of a synopsis of the story. James Arthur Ray is recognized as a self-help guru, a spiritual guru, a New Age guru, a self-help expert. He was one of the featured presenters in the movie The Secret. And you'll recall he's also been on Oprah twice, and she promoted, you know, The Secret, and she promoted James Ray and a couple of other people. James Ray has been around for a long time. He also is a published author, and he holds some retreats. The retreat that he held was known as Spiritual Warrior Camp, and it's done over 4 or 5 days, and people that attend this pay almost $10,000 to be part of this. If you read the actual publicity that he writes about this, it's like, I'm going to reveal to you secrets that no one else knows. I'm the only one that has this. I spent years trying to find this. I traveled to Peru. I did this, et cetera, et cetera. So he builds himself up as having a very special message. And he says, look, you know, don't worry about how much you're investing, because you're going to make so much money so easily and so effortlessly. Okay. The spiritual retreat that he engages in, where, you know, he's calling it Spiritual Warrior, included fasting for 36 hours in the desert. Now, the reports say that it also included not drinking water. Now, I'm not sure how that's possible. And remember, not every detail that we're discussing today has been verified. But the people that did this fasted for 36 hours. Then on a morning of the sweat lodge, they go ahead and have a breakfast buffet. I have done sweat lodges, Jim. I've done two of them. And I never saw anyone get sick, and I never saw any injuries, and I never saw any tragedies.
I've done two of them as well, so I've never seen that either.
Now, here's the point. Let's explain around what a sweat lodge is. Sweat lodge is an Indian tradition, a Native American Indian tradition. It's been around for hundreds of years. I even had someone write to me saying he's been doing it for 18 years since he was a baby. The Native Americans do it a very special way. They prepare you for it. They don't prepare you for it by fasting or by withholding water. They prepare it by making sure that on the day, after a certain time, you're only eating certain light foods, I mean very light foods, you know, fruits and liquefied foods. Okay. The next thing is, the Native Americans, when they do this tradition, they do it with all cloth. You're in this small tent, and you're sitting usually just on soil, and they bring in volcanic rocks. The volcanic rocks give off heat. The person that's leading the sweat lodge will toss water onto it to create more steam. The idea is that you're physically going to purge. As you sweat, whenever your body sweats, you detoxify. If you go into a sauna and you spend about 15 minutes in a sauna, your body will detoxify to the same level that it would have detoxified in a period of 24 hours without being in the sauna. So in other words, you're going through extreme detoxification, extreme purging. Now, the Native American Indians will do this for hours. And one of the ones that I went to, the leader, the Native American Indian that led this, said that they do it sometimes for 24 hours. Now, I don't know how they can do that, but they obviously do it. Okay. What happened with James Ray's sweat lodge is he crammed about 50 people in a very, very small tent, and he used tarps. That means he used plastic for the covering. Now, just think about it logically. Heat and plastic creates toxic fumes. Let's assume that's not the case. It's still not the way that the Native American Indians do it. So his first mistake is he makes people fast for 3 days. Mistake number two, he gets them to eat, and they probably ate too much on the day of the sweat lodge. Mistake number three, he crams too many people in the sweat lodge. Mistake number four, the sweat lodge contains tarp. Mistake number five, which is probably the most tragic of all, is he is dissuading people from leaving even as they're being sick, even as they're throwing up, and even as they're expressing to him that they want to leave. Now, I'm not saying that he tried to stop anyone, but I'm saying that based on the reports, he dissuaded people from leaving the sweat lodge. Okay. The next thing is, one of the women that survived this states, and this is her report, that she told him while he was in the sweat lodge that so-and-so has collapsed, is unconscious. And his response allegedly is, don't worry about it, you know, focus on yourself, I'll get to it later. Now, the other aspect to all of this is that James Ray was promoting this as pushing yourself, push your limits. Okay, we all need to do that at times, but we need to be careful of a number of things. Not everyone is ready for the teacher. Not everyone is ready for the program, regardless of how much money they've paid. Maybe they can afford it, but maybe they're not ready for it. Now, what I mean by that is, when clients come to me, I only work with them if they are willing and ready for it. You see, sometimes, Jim, we're actually not ready to deal with certain things, or we're not physically and medically ready to do this. Now, let me explain what I'm saying here. A sweat lodge puts a lot of stress on your adrenal glands. Most of these retreats that are 4 or 5 days long involve a lot of physical activities, a lot of long hours, little sleep, a lot of mental and emotional challenges, and ultimately that puts a lot of stress on your adrenal glands. Incidentally, most of us are walking around with adrenal exhaustion because of the kind of stress we have in our Western lifestyle. So here he is, getting people to fast, and incidentally, if you have adrenal exhaustion, if you have low thyroid, you should never be fasting without strict medical supervision. It is dangerous. It's not good for your body. So there's another mistake he makes without checking with each and every person, what is your medical condition? Okay, when you're in a sweat lodge for 2 hours, the intense heat also places all sorts of extreme stress on your body. So here I am giving you a synopsis of, just from the physical point of view, from the physical and medical point of view, and from the way that he did this, most of it was done wrong. You've done sweat lodges twice. I've done sweat lodges twice. I was in it, the first sweat lodge, for almost 3 hours, and I can tell you, my face was burning, and my ears were burning, and I thought that my face was just going to melt. And yes, it purged me physically, and it purged me emotionally. So the Native American Indians don't just do it for a physical detoxification. They sit there and they tell you stories, or they sing to you stories that will bring up emotion in you so that you release suppressed or repressed emotion. So people like you and I who are masculine and we think, you know, we have to hold everything in, we can't help but let it out. So, you know, if we've been withholding anger or withholding, you know, sadness or pain, it naturally comes out in the sweat lodge because you can't keep fighting the emotion. You can't keep using a wall. So the first thing I want to say here is these tragedies, and we're talking about 3 deaths and 18 other people injured, this is not an indictment of the sweat lodge ceremony. It's been around for hundreds of years. The problem is, how was it done and how was it actually performed? Now, the next thing is, now let's look at what was James Ray promoting and what mistakes did he make. And this is not, incidentally, Jim, an attack on James Ray. It's actually, as you know, I'm a human behavior expert, so I study psychology. I study the way people think, the way people behave. I study persuasion. I study influence. I study why people do the things they do and how to help them to change the things that they do. So I wanted to take a look at this from another perspective. Why do we create in our society gurus? Why do we believe in gurus? Now, it's not just our society, because obviously, you know, around the world, people like to place other people on pedestals. They like to create gurus. Jim, I get emails from people, I get letters, I get contacts of people who put me on a pedestal because of the things I teach, the things that I promote, the help that I've given them, the insights and the messages that I've shared. But that doesn't make me a guru. I think we need to be careful of the dangers of creating gurus. Now, here's why I'm saying this, Jim. When you create a guru, you're saying that this person is above me. And it's very easy then to become a worshipper of the person rather than a worshipper or a studier or a student of the message. Do you recall the Jonestown Massacre?
I do.
Right. Hundreds of people committed suicide there because they followed this guy, because they made him the guru. Now, if you go deeper into the study of the mind and human behavior, we have certain emotional needs. We obviously have certain physical needs, food, water, shelter, and sleep. Without those, we die. But we also have certain other emotional needs. And I don't know if you want me to list them at this point, but some of these emotional needs include attention. They include a safe, secure environment where you can mature and develop. They need an emotional connection to other people. We need acceptance from other people. We need a connection to the wider community. We need meaning and purpose, etc. If these needs are not met, we become vulnerable. And along comes someone and says, I can help you. I can give you what you need. Whether it's monetary wealth, whether it's financial security, emotional security, being accepted, getting attention, giving attention, etc., etc. When we don't have these needs met, we become emotionally vulnerable. It's very easy to sell. The problem is we look for someone else to solve our problems. We don't just look for hope. We look to a God-like kind of person. And based on the reports, James Ray was almost promoting himself as a god to the extent where he had an exercise in this retreat where he put on a white frock and played and did role-playing where he was God. And the people were supposed to be doing some sort of exercise around suicide. Now, Jim, I don't know all the details, so I can't give a full, proper assessment of what was done. But it is symbolic or indicative of the fact that we make some of these self-help gurus to be gurus. We make them out to be gurus, and they're not gurus. You see, think of any, you name any guru, and I can tell you right away, qualities that make them imperfect. Mention Anthony Robbins, who's been married twice. You know, it doesn't matter who you mention, all of us are humans. I always remind my readers by my newsletters, telling them, here are things that I have. Here are my challenges. You know, there was a time when I was on the phone with, I don't know whether it was an airline company or a phone company, and I'm arguing with them for 30 minutes, Jim. And then I'm saying to myself, what am I doing here? I've lost my senses, and I'm caught up in the emotion. I'm trying to prove myself right. I want to get, you know, this matter solved, but I'm arguing for 30 minutes. How important is this? And look how I got sucked into the drama and into my own ego. Now, I remember one of my readers, who's also a friend of mine, says, well, I can't believe you said that in a newsletter. And I said, why not? He said, well, it's not what you typically expect from, you know, a life coach, a human behavior expert. I said, of course not, because those sort of people want to promote themselves as being perfect. I don't. I want to say we're all on a journey, and yes, I deal with things every day. I have insecurities, I have fears, I have self-doubt, and that's why I can help you, because I've been through it, and I'm still going through it, and here's what I'm experiencing, and here's how I can help you. Here are my insights. So I think, Jim, the concern is that we are creating these people that we think are gods. They're like Jesus. They're holy. They're spiritual. It doesn't matter who you mention. Every single one of these people has their own challenges. You know, one of the people I do respect a lot is Dr. Wayne Dyer, because he'll tell you of the challenges he has, you know, be it with his wife or with his kids. And then he says, you know, sometimes I just remind myself, which do I want in this moment? Do I want to be right or do I want to choose peace? So he's a person that basically reminds you, you know, don't make me a guru. Don't make me that I know more than you. I just have insights and messages. You see, Jim, where we get confused, we fall in love with the person, the image of the person, rather than falling in love with the message, but still always questioning the message. There are two kinds of skeptics, Jim. There's the skeptic that says everything is BS, everything is crap, everything is false and fake and fraudulent. And then there's the second skeptic that says, I'm a doubter because I'm seeking the truth, which means whatever you present to me, I will question it, but with an open mind. And do you understand what I mean by that?
I probably fall into the second category.
Well, I'm a skeptic. I question even the things that I read or the things that I teach. I'm always looking at them and saying, is this truthful? Is this correct? Does it play out?
Yeah, I am too.
Now, the other challenge we have is the fact that, you know, one of my readers wrote to me and said to me how concerned she was because James Ray was, she said, you know, two of the people that I admire is you and James Ray. And she said, James Ray is one of the people that got me onto my own personal, you know, spiritual path, my own personal journey of self-discovery. And she said, now I'm questioning everything. And she said, he also teaches law of attraction, and so do you, and now I'm questioning law of attraction. Is it all just BS? Well, at this point, I want to say a couple of really important things, Jim. Number one, everyone and anyone can be a teacher for you. It doesn't have to be someone that's a millionaire. It doesn't have to be someone that has sold lots of books. It doesn't have to be someone that's famous. It doesn't have to be someone that's a rock star or a celebrity. Anyone can be your teacher, and I'll use an example. In my very early 20s, I was traveling through Europe. I remember being in Paris, traveling to the palace, Versailles, sitting on the gardens, and I was sitting next to someone, and he turns around and starts talking to me in French. Unfortunately, I could speak French. This was a much older guy, maybe in his mid, maybe his late 60s. And he says something to me, to this day I remember it. He says to me, vivre au jour le jour, which in literal translation means live day to day. And I remembered that because what he was saying to you was, learn to enjoy the moment. He wasn't promoting hedonism. He wasn't promoting irresponsibility, but he was reminding some of us, enjoy the moment. Don't just live for tomorrow. Don't just keep saying, well, I'll be happy when this happens, but be happy right now. My point is, I don't remember what this guy's name is. I don't remember what he looks like. I don't remember where he lives. But I do remember the message. You see, what I took from it was the message. I didn't fall in love with him. I fell in love with the message. I embraced the message. So anyone can be your teacher. Other teachers in my life have been people that others would label as enemies of mine. People that actually made me question, how much do I want this? You know, I was once demoted by a program director when I was working on radio. And it was almost like the end of my life. You know, I was like 22, 23. I was really young. And I thought, is this the end of me? And then I realized, don't let this guy kill your dream. So he was a teacher of mine. Do I remember his name? No. Do I remember his face? Vaguely. Do I remember much else about him? No. But I remember the lesson. So we need to distinguish between the message and the person delivering the message. Sometimes the doctor has a great message and tells you stop smoking, eat healthy, exercise more, even though the doctor sitting behind the desk isn't taking his own medicine. He's smoking a cigarette, he's overweight, and he's not exercising. Are we going to still listen to the message? Yes. The problem is that we get sucked in. We find someone that has a perfect body, or what we think is a perfect body, and we say, well, what did you do? And guess what? Maybe that person just has great genetics and naturally has high metabolism. And maybe they're still very young, so it hasn't hit them yet that all that junk food they're eating and the lack of sleep and maybe even the alcohol is eventually going to catch up to them, and they're going to become unhealthy, and they're going to have a pot belly. So we need...
Well, yeah, I looked at the movie the other night, The Godfather, and Marlon Brando was pretty slim in that movie, and he sort of went the pot.
Yeah, exactly. And the point here is, you've got to distinguish the message and the messenger. Distinguish one from the other. Now, one of the other points that this reader made to me was regarding the law of attraction. Well, you know, the law of attraction is nothing new, Jim. It's the concept has been around for thousands of years. In the Bible, it was stated as, you know, ask, believe, and you'll receive. It was simply, you know, whatever you ask for in prayer, believing that you'll receive, you shall receive. Okay. Then in hypnotherapy and hypnosis, we say you get more of what you focus on. Like attracts like. So the principle isn't new. The problem is that some people have taken it to an extreme where they say you are creating 100% of your reality in every single moment, and so therefore it's your fault or you're to blame. Yes, we do have control over the majority of our world. But if we get to the extreme where we say, law of attraction, I'm creating every single moment of every single aspect of my life, we can easily get sucked into blaming ourselves and condemning ourselves. There are many things for which I don't have answers for, Jim. And even other people who claim to be gurus do not have real answers. You know, for example, we say, look, you can completely turn around your world. Well, if you're a dwarf, could you become a basketball player?
No, I don't think that's going to work.
Right. Could a dwarf become an NFL player? If he focused on it every day, if he created a vision board, if he put pictures of himself up as a football player or as a basketball player, and if he trained every day, and if he exercised, and if he meditated, and if he did hypnosis, and if he did affirmations, and if he chanted, and if he did yoga, and if he did everything else that all of these people teach, could he become a football player or a basketball player? I think not, because he has physical challenges. So we have to be balanced in our approach. We have to say, these are the things in my life I can control. These are the things in my life I can't control. Then we have to say, well, what about all the millions of people in Darfur, where all this genocide occurred? Did they create it with their own thoughts? And I know that there are some spiritual philosophies that say, well, you know, they chose that life before they came here, and it's their lesson in life. And then I say, well, let me ask you this. Because, you know, I'm a truth seeker. And I say, what about the 4-year-old or the 3-year-old in Ethiopia who died of starvation? How did he or she attract that to themselves? What were their thoughts? They're just born.
Circumstances, yeah.
Right. Now, if you say, well, before they came into this world, they made a choice to live this life. And, okay, so they came into this world and they chose to die at age 2, or age 3 or age 4 of starvation? I don't have the answers to this, Jim. All I'm saying is we need to be balanced in what we believe in. Yes, I do believe that our thoughts create our world. You know, if you focus on something and you take the action, you can change your results. But if you think that it's just a matter of putting up some pictures on a board and then you'll completely transform your world, you're truly mistaken, and you're deceiving yourself. Now, the next thing about law of attraction is, you know, I read a blog of one of the survivors of the retreat of James Ray saying, well, I think that these people who died attracted it to themselves. You know, it must have been in their subconscious belief that they wanted to die. And I'm thinking,
he's drinking the Kool-Aid.
Well, it's more than drinking the Kool-Aid, because here's my next question. And I know a lot of people are going to be very mad at me, especially the people that are devotees and worshippers of the law of attraction. But these are the people who have gone to the extreme. If you believe in the law of attraction, if you believe you get more of what you focus on, that we create our reality 100%, then let me ask you the $65 million question. How did James Arthur Ray, a self-help guru, a New Age guru who's been teaching this for 20 years, how did he attract to himself this incident? What was it about his thoughts and his consciousness that attracted this incident? Did he have a picture board or a vision board on his wall at home saying, I want to have a retreat where 3 people are going to die and where I'm facing potential homicide charges? Who has the answer to that? See, I mean, for example, again, I don't know all the details, but Jim, I'm almost 100% sure that he's going to be facing homicide charges, and there's a good chance he's going to go to jail. Now, I'm not saying he's guilty, but I'm saying there's a good chance he's going to be paying a big price for what happened, because ultimately he's responsible. He was in that tent with those people. He created this retreat. He promoted it, he created. And incidentally, when it was over, when the people died, he left the facility and left the state. He didn't stay there to face the music, as we say.
What, did he have another meeting or something, or another event?
Let me ask you this. What meeting, what other meeting could be more important than the deaths of 3 people and 18 people rushed to emergency?
I mean, he knew that these people were already dead and at his event, and then he just bails?
That's what the news reports were, that he left before authorities could question him. He was gone. He left the facility. He left the state before authorities could question him.
So then we've got an accountability issue here, Patrick.
Accountability, responsibility. Jim, all of us are human beings. All of us make mistakes. It's easy for fear to take over, but when you are leading a spiritual warrior retreat and you're saying that something within you must die for something new to be reborn, then you have to question why the teacher would leave so quickly. And this brings me to the next point regarding gurus. Jim, some people are just great teachers, but they're not great students. And I'm not talking about James Ray. I'm talking about a couple of other big people that I personally have worked with who are not what they promote themselves to be. There's the people who are simply interested in marketing. They're great marketers. They're not warriors. They're not living and breathing the principles that they preach and teach. They're simply interested in the dollar. That leads me to the next point. A lot of these people who started out with great intentions of helping other people, of making a difference, of impacting people's lives, eventually get the money, get the fame, get the power, then they become like every other celebrity and every other star, and they become delusional, and they fall into delusions of grandeur, of power, of self-entitlement. Let's use the example of Michael Vick, of O.J. Simpson. These are people who think, I can get away with anything. I mean, I report on this all the time. I give commentary and opinion all the time on the media, radio, print, television, etc., talking about why celebrities engage in such stupid behavior. And it's primarily because they start to believe that they are gods, that I can do anything, and I can get away with anything, and the law doesn't affect me.
Well, the parallels here, Patrick, are also in politics. So as a society, we're seeing this in, you know, celebrities, politicians, and gurus, and so we're starting to see it across all aspects of society. So,
true, but Jim, politicians do actually have power. I mean, they make decisions. That's the difference. We don't, you know, the celebrity doesn't have the power to make political decisions that will then make changes to everyone. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
You know, the politician has the power to vote. He has literal power to change and affect your life. But when a celebrity starts to think, you know what, I can break the law. I can be involved in illegal gaming. I can actually torture animals and get away with it. I can do the following. I can do anything I want. Then you're going into self-entitlement, narcissism, delusions of grandeur, delusions of power. Then you're no longer a guru. You're just like everyone else. The problem is that we have to every day, regardless of who we are, question our motives, question our behaviors, analyze our behaviors, analyze our motives, and say, am I getting carried away? Am I starting to believe my own BS? Am I starting to think that I'm a god because I have a message? No, I'm not. Tim, I've used examples of many people. John Travolta, who lost his child. Hulk Hogan, whose family fell apart. Various celebrities who, regardless of their money, regardless of their power, are humbled by life's experience. And that's my way of saying it doesn't matter what money you have, it doesn't matter what power you have, you do not have 100% control over life. You can control your life, but only to a certain extent. There's nothing you can do that will stop your child from dying. You can try and rescue your child when they're sick, but you don't have control over them. You're not God. You don't create. You have the power to destroy, but you don't have the power to create or the power to control life. We get humbled every day by life's experiences. We need to question, what are we teaching? You know, do we really think we know more than everyone else? You know, Jim, when people come to me, and I have to say this for celebrities. Celebrities say to me, well, you know, Patrick, who are you that you know so much and you know more than me? And I said, I don't know more than you, and I'm not saying I'm better than you. I'm simply saying to you that I have some insights, some knowledge, and some messages that might be of help to you. Are you willing and are you open? I never pretend to know more than other people. You know, sometimes my ego will say that, but I remind myself, that's my ego, that's my arrogance, that's my stupidity. So, you know, I guess it comes down to becoming aware of, are we being enticed and seduced by the image of the person or by the message? You know, there are religious cults. There are the cults like the Jonestown Massacre. These cults are where we get swayed, where we follow other people like blind sheep. Study after study shows that we will tend to give the same answers as other people, that we will tend to go with the crowd. So there are certain aspects, certain psychologies of human behavior that we need to be aware of. Otherwise, we get enticed. I mean, you know.
And Patrick, it comes down to, I think, critical thinking, though. And I think that what's been happening in our society is that we've been taught to be followers, and we're doing a darn good job of it. And people are amorous of the leader for whatever cachet they bring to the table. So,
well, you're right, Tim, but there's two things there. One, we do get caught up in emotion, and we really make most of our decisions based on emotion. I've taught that before. The second thing is, you're right, we do need to engage in more critical thinking, which usually occurs when we're calmer rather than responding immediately. The third thing, you said, you know, we fall in love with these images or with these leaders or with these people because we're looking for hope, Jim. We're looking for someone else to resolve our problems because we're refusing to take responsibility for our lives, and we're saying, well, this person can do it for me. This person can help me. This person can solve all my problems. No one else can do it for you. They can give you the message. They can lead you to the well. You have to drink the water. Don't depend on someone else to solve all your problems in life. You have to take action. And I want to use this as an example. Some people did get up in that sweat lodge of James Ray and walk out, which says you have the ability to do it. Now, in the court, I can promise you, the defense for James Ray will say, well, see, some people got up and they walked out, so people are always free to walk out. But the problem is very, very few people have that mental strength, that emotional strength, that psychological strength to stand up against the crowd and say, no, I'm not going to do this. And those people that stand up and say no, just like Rosa Parks on the bus, just like the young student at Tiananmen Square in China, just like Nelson Mandela, those are the people that we look up to who said, no, I'm not going to follow everyone else. No, I'm not going to just do what everyone else says. I'm going to actually think for myself, and I know this to be wrong. And I want to give you another example, Jim, because it's true based on psychology that we tend to follow the crowd, and we're often afraid of being different. What happens if I say no? Will they reject me? Will they criticize me? Will they condemn me? Will they judge me? Oh, I can't do that, so I'll just do what everyone else says, even though it might be dangerous or it might be illogical. And I know you know what I'm talking about because you've been through a similar experience. But in one camp that I was in, there was an exercise where we're all sitting down. There's about 50 of us, and the staff jump one girl. And they jump her deliberately. And when they jump on her, it's her. She has to fight them back. Now, the 50 people seated on the room turn around and watch the staff pummeling this girl. Now, I don't know. I know you did the same program as me, so I don't know what happened in your experience, but me, I heard the sounds, I heard the screams, I look around, I look behind me, I'm right at the very front of the room, she's all the way at the back, and I look around, and I think, what the heck's going on? These people are jumping her. I don't look around to see if anyone else is doing anything. I don't go, oh, well, no one else is doing anything, so it's okay. I don't look and go, well, it's the staff pummeling her, so it must be okay. No, I get up and I go, this is wrong. And I go charging to protect the girl. And I jump them, which was at the time pretty funny. Now, they lift me up and they drag me away. And now my issues come up because all my anger is coming up, which related to my father, because I'm actually trying to protect, symbolically, I'm trying to protect my mother. And that was my issue. So that brought up my stuff.
Right.
And whilst they're holding me and I'm screaming out, you don't touch a woman, you MF, you don't hurt a woman, you don't blah, blah, blah. I look up, there's the woman at the front of the stage. She's safe, and she's now got a smile on her face. Now, it wasn't that it was set up, but she's okay. And the other people that are with me are saying, Patrick, calm down, it's okay, she's safe. And I go, oh, okay, she is safe. But there are two points here. One was my personal stuff. I entered a state of rage. I wanted to hurt these people because, in my mind, they'd hurt the girl. Number two, I also wanted to protect the girl. The other point was, right, none of the other people in the room got up to protect her. They all sat there like sheep because they are afraid to act. They were worried about saying, no, this is wrong. So what I did was right. I used my anger to protect the girl, but when I wanted to keep hurting these people, I entered the dangerous state when anger becomes rage. You see, you use your anger to protect someone, but when you want to hurt the other person that was hitting this person, you're now engaging in rage, and that's wrong. My point here, Jim, is to say, no one else got up because they were afraid of saying no. How many of those people would sit in the sweat lodge even while they're being sick or watching other people sick rather than get up and saying, I'm getting out of here, this is not safe? Not because the sweat lodge is bad, but because the way this sweat lodge is being done is bad. Now, here's the final point that I want to make about, you know, New Age gurus and self-help experts, etc. For me, probably one of the greatest, most horrible aspects of this, maybe the most shameful aspect, I'm going to be judgmental here, is that a lot of these self-help experts are creating corporations. They're creating these big conglomerates. The whole concept of self-help, you're supposed to be helping yourself and you find your own way, you find your own path, and you believe that this person is out to help you, this teacher, this leader. And then you find out, no, he's just become a corporation. Now he's charging you $10,000. Why? He's already got millions of dollars. Does he need more? Or does he really want to help people? I believe in helping people. I also believe in being well compensated for helping people. But if you really want to help people, wouldn't you drop the price and bring more people there? One of my colleagues who's a marketer says, well, Patrick, you know, people give a greater value when they pay more. That's true. But do they need to pay $10,000? They could have paid $3,000 or $5,000 for a four-day retreat and still given a great value because that's a lot of money. So, Jim, my point here is that a lot of people who set out with good intentions or at least say, I want to help people, I want to make a difference, end up becoming like the average corporation. We just want to make a lot of money. And I watch that with myself all the time. I'm like, you know, let me look at what I'm doing here. Can I really give back more to people? How can I? And, you know, recently I did a promotion where I gave $500 worth of product for $100. Now, that doesn't mean everyone should buy it, but it's there. If you want to buy it, take advantage of it for a while.
Mm.
You know, the other thing is that we always have choices, Jim. We always have choices about, you know, how do we want to be? How do we want to live? And I'm always questioning my own motives. This call is not about me, but I'm using this as an example. As a self-help expert, as a person that works with high-profile clients and celebrities, etc., I'm always questioning my own motives and saying to myself, you know, Patrick, why are you doing this? Is it just for attention? Is it just for ego? Do you want to just make money? Do you really want to help people? And that's the only way. You have to be vigilant with yourself to make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons. And if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, at least acknowledge it, and then you can take action to correct it. But, you know, too many of these self-help experts become narcissistic. One reader wrote to me and said, you know, James Ray has become narcissistic. He's talking more about his own pain rather than the pain and the loss of the people that died. Well, I'm not going to pass judgment on that, but I think, you know, to summarize, and maybe I've repeated this too many times, don't put people up on pedestals because they'll always take themselves down. Don't worship people. Don't expect people to be perfect. Embrace the message, but always understand that every person teaching you is a human being. Every person teaching you will make mistakes. I remind that to myself all the time. And I say to my clients, please don't put me on a pedestal. Yes, you know, I'm excited that my message has transformed your life. I'm grateful that my book has transformed your life. And I'm truly grateful for the compliments you give me and the gratitude you express. But please don't think that I'm perfect because I still go through the same things that you go through. I still have moments of insecurity, moments of self-doubt. I still question myself sometimes. You know, and that's what we all experience because we're human. But some of us want to create this image that I know everything. I'm smarter than you. Because if I don't tell you that, you won't come to my seminars or you won't buy my product. So again, what are the motives? So I don't know, Jim, what are your thoughts after this long dissertation by me?
Well, the biggest takeaway for me personally on this is, you know, listen to the message and not the messenger, because the message itself is more powerful than the messenger. And you know, that's the, you know, because like you said, you don't remember that guy that taught you that lesson, but you remember the lesson. And I think that You know, the, I could walk out to the local the local store right down the street, 7-Eleven or whatever, and I bet I could learn something from somebody behind the counter there that would teach me a lot of value in, you know, probably several aspects of my life. So it doesn't matter.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You're a father. I'm sure you learn wonderful lessons from your kid.
Every day. He's,
right.
Yeah, I mean, every day.
You're not a spiritual guru. You know, the lessons can come from all sorts of different people. I have a friend of mine, and he and his wife's daughter is about 9 years of age. She reminds me, she brings me down to earth in moments of, you know, you're feeling like, you're feeling a little blah, but here she is smiling and laughing, and just that's a lesson in itself. You can get a lesson from anyone if that's what you're looking for, if you're looking for the lesson. And I know that we tend to worship people who already, you know, are the real deal, as they say. You know, I've had people come to me and say to me, wow, Patrick, you're the real deal. And I said, well, it depends what you mean by that. Do you mean I'm perfect? No, I'm not. Do you mean I'm the real deal, that I do my utmost best to live and breathe everything I preach and teach? Yes, I do. That's true. But, you know, we can learn from everyone. We can learn from people that we hate. We can learn how not to do things. Children put their parents on a pedestal till they get to around age 12, and then they deliberately go out of their way to tear down their parent because they're trying to form their own identity. And this is particularly true more with boys than it is with girls. But even
I got 2 years left.
Yeah, you better enjoy it. But even children put their parents on pedestals. And, you know, I remember a very dear friend of mine, and this is a girl who helped me get on my spiritual path in terms of, when I say spiritual path, in terms of healing my own insecurities, my own issues. And we met at a time when she was on vacation with her mother and sister, because they found out that her father had been having an affair for about 11 years, a secret affair.
Mm.
How he'd been doing it for so long, I don't know. But she was just 20 at the time, and she was devastated because she said, he was always my idol. I always worshipped him, and now I'm completely confused. I'm completely disoriented. I'm shattered. I don't know what to believe anymore. And it's natural as a child, but, you know, as a son or as a daughter, to look up at your mother or father and worship them and make them an idol and put them on a pedestal. But we need to be careful of that. And again, this girl helped me get on my path by helping me to get in touch with how I was acting and behaving. And it was something that she said to me that I still remember to this day. And Jimmy, it was about 15 years ago. She said to me, the poor girl, so I'm going to share, you know, my crap here. The poor girl broke down and cried when she said, Patrick, I can't come up to your standard. And I went, what? What are you talking about? I didn't realize that the way I'd been guiding this relationship was I had placed such high expectations on her to come up to my standard.
Mm.
And then another female friend of mine told me that about a year later, a similar thing, and I hadn't seen her in 10 years or quite a few years. I was like, oh. Then I became aware, this is what I'm doing. So again, the lesson didn't come from a four-day retreat where I spent $10,000. It didn't come from some, you know, book by an author who spent 20 years in the Peruvian mountains and studying the Incans and the Mayans and the Huicholi tribes. It can come from the person next to you. Just be open. There's the lesson. Be open. But also, if something doesn't feel right, don't do it. And I'm not saying give in to your mood or give in to your comfort zone, but in your heart, you know sometimes when something is wrong. Listen to your inner voice when something is wrong, when it just doesn't feel right. You know, we look back on things and we say, well, in hindsight, in 2020, yeah, I remember there were red flags, but I just ignored those red flags. Well, don't ignore the red flags. Listen to them. And the final point I want to make, Jim, relates to this letter that I got from a reader, you know, who said, you know, that she lost hope. And she said, you know, I grew up in a poor family. We were never business people. And my dream has been to start my own business. And now I'm ready to give up based on what happened with James Ray and, you know, the law of attraction. I don't believe in any of it anymore. And my point is, don't give up on hope. Don't ever give up on hope. Look at it and say, can I make this happen? Now, maybe you're not going to run your own business, but maybe you'll go into business partnership with someone else. You can still find the solution. You can still find an answer. Maybe it's not going to be the way you expected it to be. You know, maybe for her, she needs some more action. Maybe you need to find yourself what we call a mastermind group. Go and start associating yourself with people that do run businesses and see if you can learn from them. But don't give up hope. The other point, particularly for this reader as well as everyone listening to the call, is that sometimes the path to inner peace isn't the same, isn't the path we expected. You know, we think, hey, if I become rich, or if I become famous, or if I marry the right person, or if I have the right amount of children, or if I get to own the right house, I'll have inner peace, I'll have joy. Well, be careful, because the pathway to inner peace isn't always what you expected. You know, so we think, I won't be happy unless I'm on television. Well, what happens if you end up doing some completely different career and you're suddenly happy? Do you want to be right? Do you want to be happy? If you remain open-minded, you can find happiness. If you remain closed-minded, you might be right, but you won't be happy. Any closing thoughts, Jim Peake?
Well, I think that goes in line with, you know, when you were coaching me a few weeks ago, instead of being right, be happy.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot easier to be happy than to be right. And
I remind myself of that all the time. That example I gave you when I was arguing like a bozo on the phone with either a telephone company or an airline company for charges that I didn't feel were justified, I had to ask myself, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy?
Right.
Sometimes you've got to fight for principles, but do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? You have to know, how significant is this in the grander scheme of things? Sometimes you might lose a couple of dollars, but your peace, you can't buy. Your health, you can't buy back. So I might spend 30 minutes, you know, getting really tense and really angry, and my blood is boiling and fuming.
To do what? To save $50 or $75 or whatever it might be?
$30.
It's not even worth it.
And then you're going to spend $120 going to the doctor saying, I'm sick and I've got an ulcer and I can't sleep. And then you'll be spending money on medicine. So just look at your life and just make decisions based on what I always preach and teach, balance. And please be aware of giving people your power. Don't give away your power to anyone. And what I mean by that is, you know, I work with a lot of female clients, and one of the things I like to teach is empowerment. And they say to me, well, what does it mean to be empowered? And I say, oh, it's very simple. It's where you today will decide how you're going to feel. Not anyone else, not Patrick Wannis, not Jim Peake, not James Ray, not the husband, not the wife, but you. You will decide how you're going to feel today in every moment. Now, I know that's not I know other people are going to affect you. If your child is sick, if your child's had an accident, if something's gone wrong, it's going to affect you. But the idea is that you don't give away all of your power to someone else, to a religion, to a cult, to a guru, to an expert, to a speaker. No one is that perfect person. You know, Jim, I even have a controversial opinion about the Dalai Lama. I love his message. I love his books. And the beauty is he's going around the world and trying to teach more people the art of joy, the art of happiness, the art of inner peace. But be careful about putting him on a pedestal, because he doesn't live the same life that you and I do, Jim. He doesn't.
No, not at all.
He doesn't have a wife and children. He doesn't have taxes to pay. And I'm not saying he doesn't pay taxes, but he doesn't have to get in a car every day and have a BlackBerry and have messages and emailing and send his kids to college. He doesn't have to go to the doctor, and he doesn't have to worry about health insurance.
He lives a life of a rock star.
It's a different kind of lifestyle. It's a different kind of lifestyle. So be careful when you think, I want to be 100% like that person. Why can't I be like that person? Well, the reason you can't is because he's not living the same life. He's made a choice to live a life as a teacher, not necessarily as a student. It's much harder to have inner peace and harmony and be like the holy monk when you're married with children and you're living in the Western life and you have to pay off a mortgage and you have to pay the bills and you have to go to work and you just lost your job and you just lost your car and your child's sick and your wife is arguing with you. Now, let's test you. Do you still have inner peace? Can you still smile? That's the person I look up to. That's the person that's living it. So, you know, just You know, maybe I'm rambling a little bit here, Jim, but again, just take a balanced look at life and be a truth seeker. Always question. Doubt the doubt.
And right, always ask questions. Yes, I think that will serve all of us extremely well.
And I say to people, look, listen to what I'm saying. Does it make sense for you? Does it fit? Maybe it does. If it does, use it. And if only 50% of it does, then use that 50%. But don't think that I know everything. My goal is just to help you to unlearn the BS, unlearn the lies and the negative programming. And I don't know that you have to go through all of these crazy processes to do it. Sometimes you do, but not always.
Right, right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, Patrick. And I think this has been a very enlightening conversation. This is Jim Peek at MySuccessGateway.com. I think this has been a very enlightening conversation, and I'd like to thank Patrick Juanes for your time. You can find Patrick at PatrickJuanes.com. Thanks very much, Patrick.
Thank you, Jim.